spooky. WJFK.
This is the Don and Mike Show.
Meantime, the Don and Mike Show are going to sign off the radio airwaves for the last time today. John Geronimo, whose real name is Mike Source, is retiring, ending a run of 23 years for the show. Geronimo's partner, Mike O'Mara, will continue to work at WJFK. The Mike O'Mara Show, co-starring Buzz Burbank, starts Monday.
What a long career.
Yeah.
Well, and he's been in the business 35 years. Hopefully he'll return one day. Wants to get his life together and all that kind of thing. Just feels like it's a time to leave. But I'm going to miss that show. I've talked about it before. I'm a huge fan of the show. It has made me laugh so many times over the years. I'm really going to miss him. But we wish Don the best. And I'm glad Mike is hanging in there and doing a new show starting Monday.
Buzz Burbank. Do you know Buzz?
Buzz is the news guy who I've always said, Buzz is like...
Oh, you're going to love this. Have you heard this?
No, I haven't, no.
It's too bad we dismissed him. You're going to love this.
This is a Buzz segment?
Well, it's just more of Buzz being Buzz.
The news guy who I've always said, Buzz is like the secret weapon on that show, because he says some very funny things kind of under the radar.
Right.
He's very, very funny. Yeah.
It's about to be on the radar.
Yeah, that's right.
So we'll see. Okay.
Wish you the best, Don.
Yeah. End of an era.
Speaking of radar.
Yeah.
All right.
Everybody loves Buzz, don't they? God damn it. Well, I love him, too.
All I know is that they're different than you, and that's what counts. The Don and Mike Show.
She won't leave my buttocks alone.
I know.
Why do you favor rape?
I don't think we do.
I brandish some dangy money.
Here he is. I said I don't think we do.
Is everybody happy?
How y'all doing?
Oh, I forgot to put on panties.
I guess the word is anal.
Anal.
Who didn't feel that way?
Isn't that the second time she said John Geronimo?
Yeah.
It's the second time. It's like the second report they've had.
Well, she doesn't listen to the show. She reads the prompter. She could barely get out. It's like she's doing an eye exam. WJF. Is that a K?
That annoys me. For some reason, that truly annoys me.
Let's see, Mike. Before you and I get to the real nitty gritty.
Yes.
What do we have? We have the Belcher made a couple of calls.
Okay.
A couple of final calls.
Mm-hmm.
You know the douchebag guy?
Yeah.
That guy, you.
I love him.
You.
You're the douchebag.
All right, here we go.
And you're on the radio. You're on the radio. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
Okay.
You tuned in a few minutes ago.
You did. What do you want me to do? Give you an excuse for coming in late?
I'm sorry, I'll bring a note next time.
Well,
I just wanted to say that I've enjoyed listening to you for years, and it's been a pleasure to be a caller to the show and to participate in the show. And I wish you all the best, and I just wanted to say thank you for years and years of great radio. Don Geronimo, and whoopee!
Is that his response? Just the laugh?
And then there's one final call to Hugh Hamilton.
Ah, very good.
But on the other hand, if sex offenders are people too, then where are they supposed to live? How do we solve this public policy dilemma? More solutions right now. Good afternoon. Talk back. You're up first.
Hello. Back.
Mr. Hamilton.
Yes, sir.
There is a simple solution, barring internment camps. What to do with convicted sex offenders? It almost sounded like a bumper sticker slogan, the way you said sex offenders are people too. But as I said, barring internment camps to keep them away from humanity in general, I would say that you could also put them in a soon-to-be vacant radio studio in Rockville, Maryland.
Oh, come on. Now you see, you can overdo a good thing. Come on.
Overdo.
I'm Hugh Hamilton.
Hugh Hamilton. Oh, come on.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much, Belcher guy. Well, we're coming down now, Mike, to crunch time.
Yes, 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 yes.
I like this. As the studio gets darker and it gets emptier.
It's really emptying out here. It's kind of sad, isn't it? I mean, you see the rooms one by one, the lights go off, and it's just you and me in this tiny little studio, as it has been for over 20 years.
I think the...
How many years has it been exactly? Is it 23?
This is our 23rd year together.
Jeez.
Yeah. I think probably our tightest working conditions were when we were at WAVA, when they were rebuilding the studio, and we had to do our show out of the news cubicle. Remember we had Vicki Lawrence come in that day?
There was a big studio at WAVA, which they were putting new equipment in, and they moved us. We were actually, at that stage in our careers, somewhat cooperative with management, where we said, yeah, we'll go ahead and do that.
We'll work in a small room with no ventilation and a bunch of hot machinery for like 2 weeks while you take your time to rebuild the studio.
And the only celebrity that came by during that period of time was Vicki Lawrence.
Baby!
And I'm not sure whether in the wee hours of the morning that you and I
Vicki Lawrence!
Mommy boobies!
You and I had actually taken the time to practice perfect hygiene.
Vicki Lawrence!
Why do you favor rape?
But it was...
Vicki!
I better bring my rubbers.
It was special. I just remember being very conscious of my breath. I was very conscious of my breath. Well, I believe in those days I may have had a smoke or two during the show.
Just those days.
Just those days. Well, in the studio. And I want to thank you for that. Back in the old days.
Well, as I smoke in the studio now. So.
I mean, it's just, you know.
It's funny how things turn around.
It was a very strange experience. I can't even imagine that I would do that today. But, you know, I sat there in a airtight studio. We were airtight, man. Airtight.
Do you know what
with the cigarette going the whole time.
When we were talking about the Challenger before, that was a bad day for America, but a great day for us because, as it turns out, we were to the point, Mike and I were to the point, we were having some success working together, and we wanted to play less music and talk more. And even though our ratings were going up exponentially, the station said, well, you know, you're outperforming the station. That was remember at WAVA, they would say, okay, here's the good news and the bad news. The good news is you guys are up to number three in the ratings.
Right.
The bad news is the rest of the station's in 10th place. So rather than have the rest of the station adapt to what we did, they said to us, we think you should play more music to sound like the rest of the low-rated station.
Oh, there was a battle. I mean, it seems to me that there wasn't a day at WAVA where there wasn't a battle about music.
So what happens is that the consultant, Alan Burns, with his goddamn King Richard haircut, he's going to call us down to the Keybridge Marriott, where we're going to have breakfast at 11 a.m., and Mike and I had decided, going into this meeting, that this is where the rubber meets the road.
We were going to put our foot down and say, hey, we're successful. We want to continue to be successful, and the only way that's going to happen is if you let us do the show the way we want to do it.
Now, as it turns out, the way things work out, we sat down. We were there before him, plotting out the room, saying, what door is he going to come through? And do you remember?
He was at the table, I believe, when we got the notice. Because the waitress came
over
when
we finally... I was going to say, so he had arrived.
I'll never forget
down,
that waitress.
And it was an awkward moment, and the waitress walked up, and she said...
Bulletin, gentlemen, the space shuttle. I think she said, bulletin, I think the space shuttle just blew up. And she said it in such a way that... We didn't believe it at first because she was so crass.
We thought she was making some type of like joke, and because we did at the time a semi-risque show, we thought, all right, she's making a joke with us.
Yeah, and she walked away, I think, after that. And then we see people off the dining room that were in the little lounge area, and they were gathering around in the lounge area, and we walked in, and that's where we saw it for the first time.
And at that point, then, the consultant says, well, we really shouldn't have this discussion today.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike and I went in the next day, and that was the first day we never played one song on our show.
And it was weird that it had happened when the actual meeting with the consultant was going to be about playing records.
Yeah, that's how, you know, I really don't believe when people say everything happens for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so. I don't think there's that divine plan. I do think when God closes a door, he opens another one. And if you choose to go through the door, you might get bit in the ass, but you might get something good out of it.
And it was also the very...
That's what I think happened there, that we were... It was just the time that we had had enough.
Yeah.
We were going to tell this guy to get off.
We had a reputation, or, you know, even at that stage of the time. It was we were beginning to develop a reputation as, you know, the squeaky wheel, the guys that are complaining all the time. You know, guys that are troublemakers, guys that, you know, don't take anything seriously. And we go in the following day, and we did the opposite... show from what anybody could have ever believed that we would do. And what struck me is you and I, when we were doing that show, knew it the whole time. I mean, it was nothing for us to go in and do that. It was so easy for us. And I don't want to say easy under the circumstances, but I want to say it was easy because the serious switch to the serious content was not an effort for us. We were doing what we did anyway, which was talk about reality. And everyone that came up to us after we did that show, you remember how incredulous people were? They were all saying, wow, I can't believe you guys were able to do that.
And it was
to the point where it started to get a little annoying.
And it was not that we had done something on the show that was shocking.
Nope.
Or, you know, having girls get naked or people eat bad stuff. It was people were coming up and saying, we've never heard radio like this before. And thank God we were able then to go to the consultants and the people at the station to say, listen, the show's definitely taken a turn this way.
I don't want the listening audience.
Meaning less music and more talk.
I don't want the listening audience to think that we, you know, we really enjoyed doing shows about tragedies. The part that was gratifying to both you and me is on both those occasions, and those are the ones over the career that jump out, two shows, it was a chance to really communicate intimately with our audience and in such a way that, we both were aware while it was happening that we were doing the audience some good and we were doing ourselves good. Yeah. And that's what I remembered. And I think that what it showed both our listeners and also management at the time was we can do anything that's thrown our way. And you know, that one little show where we just talked to listeners who were pouring their hearts out because everybody was affected. And I think a lot of people that are younger in our listening audience right now might not know how significant that space shuttle tragedy was for people. It really was an amazing tragedy.
And for us, it was a validation that the direction we wanted to move in was the correct direction.
Yeah.
Because on the occasions when you had to stop and be serious, we could do it. But then we found it impossible to go back to the shuck and jive. Hey, good morning. How are you going to do it? Even though, we were surrounded by crazy, a guy with a high hat and a guy with a horn, mm-hmm. And we actually at one point had a live chicken in the studio, and it was absolutely everything that we were not at that point wanting to be, and making the transition was really helped by the support we got from our listeners back then.
You bet. I mean, that doesn't exist. That show that we did that day would not have been possible without the participation of people who I realized at that moment that radio not only informs and entertains, but radio, people that participate in it, they're feeling this tragedy and they want to get it out. And they want to get it out to a lot of other people. And it made sense to me. And we've done it a couple of times since. We've done it on a variety of levels. And it's, to me, the most satisfying radio we've ever done.
It's like even after Frieda's show. And I think I mentioned earlier that I get ooged out still when people will come up to me. And people very well-intentioned will say, hi. You know, I love the show. I loved Frieda. I loved that show mm-hmm. about Frieda. Well, the show came easy because I was talking about the love of my life, but also it came easy because, as you mentioned, we'd been through crisis, and I just went into that mode mm-hmm. for that particular show. Wouldn't have been prepared to, as it turns out, I've said many times, I came back too early, but the one thing I'm glad about is that my true feelings for Frieda came out that day
mm-hmm.
on the air. And they wouldn't have if I had not been prepared by having been through other stuff that was heavy and made the transition back and forth. You and I also have something that most radio guys want and they can't ever get, and it's chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And it's even like right now, as our conversation goes back and forth.
Right.
And admittedly, I talk more. But when Mike wants to talk, we have got almost an unspoken communication now between us.
Mm-hmm. It's been that way. Would I be overstating it if I said it's been that way since the very first show that we did?
Since I did an afternoon show and you came and sat in.
Yeah, I came in the first time I met you. You were in a production studio, and I think I approached you, almost pitched you, because I had listened to you when you were at WPGC, and I had been a fan of your show. And Gene Baxter, a guy that's known as Bean, does a show out in L.A. now, Kevin and Bean, a very successful morning show, I believe, out there right now. And Bean came up mm-hmm. to me in the hallway, and Bean says, you'll never guess who we hired. I was doing production for the station. I was actually the production director part-time. I would come in and do production directors basically do promos and commercials for the station. And that's what I was doing part-time for the station. And Bean walks up to me and says, "You'll never guess who we just hired." And I said, "Who?" And he went, hey. I said, "Geronimo?" "Oh, great, great." So you'd work there for a while, and I'd come in a couple of days a week, and we wouldn't see each other. And I went in, and I think I saw you in the production studio, and you were the way you are when you meet people for the very first time. You were couldn't have been more charming.
I'm shy.
It was you're very shy. And then what did I do? I said, "Do you need an agent? You need a Jewish agent." And then I said,
"You started just screwing around
in the production studio
with me." And then the litmus test for Mike was, I said, "Okay, great. You know, yeah, we can work on that." But I remember very, very clearly going back in, not wanting to tape anything, and calling Mike back into the studio, and with him not knowing what was going on, just saying, "Hey, my agent is here."
And we riffed on it at that moment, and a few things back behind the scenes went on, and then it seemed like in the blink of an eye we were working doing mornings together right after that, and it all started with with me coming into you and saying, and then you coming up to me. Because I guess you realized early on the chemistry was there. You were, had much more major market and overall radio experience than
I had.
It's
so rare. There were these guys in Chicago that I listened to, Steve Dahl and Gary Meyer. They were a great influence on my career as well. Steve Dahl is the first guy back in 1981 that I had ever heard do an all-talk show where the guy really talked about anything that was going on in his life. Mm-hmm. And he had a good rapport with the guy that was his partner. But even when I would listen to them, I would notice that it was really Steve Dahl talking, and then Gary Meyer would go, "Uh-huh." And when Steve Dahl had to go to the bathroom, Gary Meyer would talk. We do not have that relationship. We have an ongoing conversation.
You're right. It's always been like that. There's always been, as far as personal feelings are going here, and we're doing a lot of that on today's show, it's very easy for people to come up and say, "Hey, you're the funny guy." Nobody understands the real workings of the way, and I was going to save this till the end, but I'll say it now. The way it works is you have to have one guy that allows the other person to be funny in a partnership. It has to work that way. And the challenges I face going forward are to be able to set a table like you set a table. And that's not easy to do.
You're going to have a hard time because you don't have someone like I have you.
Mm-hmm.
You and I have such a chemistry together.
Right.
And I enjoy your success. I enjoy, like I mentioned, that thing with the Empire Carpet guy.
Right.
I mean, that's, for me, that was always...
I would play to you. I mean, the audience we'd play to each other. I mean, we'd like, nobody, if there was one person at the top of the list that we like to make laugh, it would be each other. And that was from day number one. Also, I'll throw this at you, and this is just talking about partnerships in radio, in show business, because there have been some great ones over the years that you think about where there's that tension, too.
Elliot and Woodside.
Elliot Woodside, that's the first team that I thought about. There has to be, I do believe this, in order to be successful, there has to be that brotherly, competitive spirit. And do you think there's ever been a radio team that was more competitive than you and I?
We would both be going after the same prize and not realize that we were losing sight of the prize because we were pushing each other out of the way.
Early on with guests, that's what would happen.
Well, just imagine two guys trying to run through a door to get to a piece of pie at the same time. We were constantly doing that.
And that was really, that was a situation where you have to let it find its way, and it did, and frankly, you eat, sleep, breathe this business, and I realized that, I can't sit there and just be punching with you all day long, and one guy's got to take the lead. It always has to work that way in every partnership, and it did, and one thing that we never disagreed on were the big issues when it came to dealing with management, when it came to, me getting paid what I got paid, and the fact is we never disagreed on the big stuff, and on the huge issues, the little nitpicky stuff, we'd have our moments like any partnership. My God, over 23 years.
But there was never a doubt that Mike had my ass every single day, and I had his. Had your back.
Absolutely. And boy, I'll tell you, when we had a common cause, as far as the dancing that we would do.
Forget about it. You could not beat us.
It was unbeatable.
You could not beat us.
And that's the way it worked. But the chemistry is right. I mean, it was, you cannot fake that, and that's when it's like, it flows like water.
I can only equate it to, I love everything in football. And I've told Mike this before, off the air. I've always said to Mike, I consider myself to be like the Peyton Manning of this team. And Mike is the star player, Marvin Harrison. How many times have you seen Peyton Manning go to the line and just look at Marvin Harrison? And what it means is we're changing the play. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at you this way. Do you know what I mean? And he'll look back. I cannot tell you literally thousands of times we'd be in the middle of something. It's happened today. And all of a sudden, I don't have to say to Mike, hey, we're going to go this way. We're going to go this way. You know what we're going to do.
Yep.
And that's because we've had 23 years of a very, very harmonious friendship and partnership.
You know, you talk about going forward and the challenges that I will face, not having somebody with the chemistry. And I have a great relationship with Buzz and with Rob. But when you talk about that, I would say, you know, we're gonna have a lot of fun.
I was
with
not
this.
Trying to diminish.
Oh,
that
I know
anyway.
Exactly, but I know exactly what you meant. And of all the things that I will probably never enjoy more going forward, you know, my little silly voices that I've done for 20 years on this show, it'll never, ever be as much fun as it was when I would play to you. Because you, that is where it was just right hand, left hand, bing, bang, boom, and it would work. And you want to talk about changing the plays? That's when we'd both change the plays
right.
In the middle of it, and nobody get phased by it, and so much fun would be had. And that's the thing of all, I mean, as far as the, you know, the day-to-day playing the game, that's what I'm going to miss the very most. You know, as far as the,
you know,
the work ethic that you have going in, I make a joke about it, but, you know, quite frankly, I go forward spreading the work that you did, because nobody's capable of living and breathing it like you did. I've never seen anything like it. You do. You live it. You it's at 10 o'clock at night, at 6 o'clock in the morning, it's always on your mind. And, you know, that makes for great radio. And it's been a blast.
It takes someone with a lot of patience, as you have. This would not work if we were both of the same personality.
It couldn't.
And
I don't think there's any way that works.
I'm a little bit too much type A, and you're a little bit too much sometimes type B.
Right.
And together, as we've said many times, half a brain here, half a brain there equals a full brain.
Oh, and I, you know, as you mentioned before, when the time would come, when it would be time to get it done, and we'd have a battle, and boy, we had battles.
We did.
The battles we have fought over the years, and, you know, we'd have little hand gestures that we'd use. They weren't dirty or anything, but one of them was the one of them that I love the most that we both use would be the little puppet move, where we'd be handling the marionettes, and we both use it. I'm not giving anything away by saying this. We'd handle, you know, we'd look at each other. We'd come out of a meeting with some kind of management, and we'd both look at each other, and we'd just do the little marionette move because we had played the game. We'd played the game so well.
The manager would leave thinking that they had beaten us, and actually we had turned it around on them, just made them think that they won.
Right.
I mean, does anybody out there relate to that?
I'm sure that people that in the, you know, in any kind of corporate environment, when you walk into...
We would walk out a lot of times and just go... Those suckers.
You know, the toughest thing about, you know what the toughest thing was about all of this going forward with you going, you know, to do what you're going to do and hopefully have a wonderful, happy life, and me staying on and having to, you know, deal with the suits and sell myself to these suits. And I said to myself, wow, you know, doing the show, totally, I'm fine. I'm fine with that. That will evolve into whatever it evolves into. It'll never be the same. It'll be what it is. But the behind the scenes dealing with management, I became so conditioned to rolling everything by you. And, you know, it was so much fun in a way to say, okay, here's how we're going to play this one. And we did it. And we did it successfully for a very, very long time. You came to me way back when in the WAVA days, and you said to me, I won't mention the dollar figure, so we're going to make this much money. You and I are going to make this much money. And I'm going to look you in the eye right now and tell you you were wrong. You were wrong by a few multiples.
We made more, didn't we? We done good.
We have, and you know, but that's not what it's all about. What it's all about is having the chemistry, and really, when I say the competitive thing, that's fun too. And once we got our heads around it, it became more fun and more enjoyable.
Once we figured out that we were like brothers,
right?
Meaning, and really, very literally, I could say to Mike, you know, hey, screw you, you're a dick. Now, if somebody else says to Mike, screw you, you're a dick, I would be the first person to jump in their face.
Well,
you know, as you would and have many times.
And what I joke with people about, because really, when you talk about 23 years and you're talking about the number of altercations, real fights that we've had, we haven't had many.
No.
But I will tell you, the ones that we would have, would they head for cover at the radio stations that we'd be in? You wouldn't have people in the hallways. People would actually be hiding under desks when we would go at
Mom and Dad are fighting in the production room.
And that, you know, as time went by, that didn't happen as often. No. And, you know, it's always been fun. And as I've always said to everybody about this show, everything around it, everything, all the behind-the-scenes stuff, you know what? If you came to me 20 years ago and said, this is what you're going to have to deal with, I would have said, there's no way I'm going to do this. But the actual day-to-day doing the radio program and being in here and having fun, there's no better job in the world. I mean, it is so much fun.
I've got to be honest.
Turn on the microphone.
I wouldn't change it.
Mm-hmm.
I think we are better people, really, for all the fights that you and I have been through together.
Mm-hmm.
It's what kept the show together.
Right.
We had our personal moments, too, when your dad died,
mm-hmm.
when you went through your divorce.
Right.
And then you returned the favor when Frida passed away.
We've called each other. We've been on the telephone with each other at probably, well, no, not probably, absolutely, the lowest times of our life. Here's the strange thing about, and I don't want to dwell on Frida passing, but I will tell you, I remember vividly.
You were my second phone call.
That whole afternoon leading up to that phone call. Do you know what I have no memory of?
What?
None. Zero. Of that show I did the next day. I literally don't remember doing it. I don't remember anything about it. I blank on it completely. Leading up to that, I remember that. I remember just being in shock, and I think really just dealing with that whole thing. It was, you know, you did it. I mean, you do it when you have to deal with all of that tragedy. You go into an autopilot mode.
Yeah.
And I don't have any memory.
And I don't even, you know, about that day too. It's weird, your priorities.
You told me, you know, you said, hey, just go in. You were doing it because you felt a responsibility
to
all of us. You
I
said,
remember standing,
go in and do the show. I want you to make the announcement.
Standing
you
know. In front of the hospital, and I had just got done calling Bart to tell him this awful news. I go, well, I got to call Mike because, yeah, hey, the show's got to go on tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, that was a great day. We should break, and you and I can get all sloppy in a minute, okay?
Okay, very good.
All right, be right back on the final Don and Mike Show.
This is the Don and Mike Show.